Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline, Scottsdale, Arizona, Friday, February 5. Hello again, Orion Samuelson, along with Max Armstrong, spending some time looking at another tough week on Wall Street. The first week of February was probably a little better than the first week of January, but not by very much. The NASDAQ today ended at its lowest level since October of 2014. And the other changes on Wall Street for today, for the week, the Dow down 1.6%, the S&P 500 down 3.1%, and the NASDAQ today dropped 5.4% for the week. So we weren't much better than the first week of January, and I guess we can only hope that it does get a little better. The stock that was really hit hard today on Wall Street, LinkedIn, and several other technology companies also this week, the following week forecasts of their profit picture. But LinkedIn today dropped 43% to $108.38 a day after the company's revenue forecast missed expectations. Let's look at some of the other high-tech stocks that were impacted today. Facebook dropped 5.8%. Alphabet, for those of you that still have difficulty remembering, that formerly was named Google. But Alphabet down 3.6%. Amazon down 6.4%, and Netflix down 7.7%. Stocks like Amazon and Netflix, which both more than doubled in price last year, have been favorites with hedge funds. Today's action, though, may suggest some hedge funds are taking a harder look at valuations of those companies. One analyst said, "Tech has got a few shining examples of what happens if you disappoint. And when that happens, that calls into question the valuation of all high multiple stocks." And so the Dow Industrial Average today ended down 200 points. The S&P 535 points. The NASDAQ Composite dropped 146 points. Part of the decline today came because of the January jobs report. It did show the unemployment rate at a very low level, dropping below 5% down to 4.9%. But analysts were expecting the number in today's Labor Department report to show 190,000 new jobs put together in January. That number came in at 115,000 jobs. Strong wage growth, however, and falling unemployment suggested a March interest rate increase could not be completely ruled out. So we start playing that game again on whether or not there will be an interest rate put in place by the Fed during 2016. And declining issues today outnumbered advancing issues by 2,330 to 720. And on the NASDAQ, 2,288 issues were lower, 509 advanced during the day's trade. The S&P 500, incidentally, posted 7 new 52-week highs, but 26 new lows. And the NASDAQ recorded only 3 new highs today and 105 new lows. We might take a look, too, at some of the commodities outside of the agribiz commodity. Gold prices rose to a 3-month high in a volatile trade today because of that mixed U.S. job report and the reluctance, perhaps, of some investors to put their money into stocks, pieces of paper, rather than solid commodities like gold. The other commodity today that also saw its market moving lower was the oil market. The oil market, not much of a change, fairly quiet day. But for the week, again, oil continues under pressure. And now the marketplace is waiting to see if OPEC countries, along with Russia, will hold a meeting to discuss the oversupply and the possibility of cutting production so that supply will come more in demand. Countries like Venezuela, for example, are really hurting. And that country in particular has been in the forefront asking for a meeting with the OPEC countries. And maybe going into the weekend, some people seem to think that that was a greater possibility than it was at the beginning of the week. There were some agricultural earnings reports this week that we should be taking a look at. CME Group, the world's largest futures market operator, reported stronger than expected quarterly earnings today. Higher market data revenues helping to offset a decline in trading volume. In the fourth quarter ended on December 31st, Chicago-based CME said net income dropped to 80 cents a share compared to 91 cents a share in the same quarter just a year ago. Tyson Foods, the country's largest meat processor, said today that it was raising its full-year profit forecast. Reasons? Sharp drop in feed and livestock costs. And that sent Tyson shares to a record high today. They were up 12% in the trade. And a good part of that is the cutback in costs of producing meat because of the fallen prices in corn and soybeans. But if you look at the revenue side of Tyson's, it was down 15.4%. And then there was ADM that reported midweek, and midweek reporting the lower adjusted quarterly profit, and much of that because of slumping energy prices, putting pressure on ethanol margins, a strong dollar dragging down U.S. grain exports, lighter than normal corn and soybean sales by U.S. farmers amid the lowest post-harvest prices in years, also limited marketing and processing opportunities in the quarter for ADM. Getting back to that ethanol production at ADM and across the nation by other companies, ethanol prices last week fell after the Energy Information Administration said stockpiles jumped 4% last week to the highest levels of ethanol in roughly 4 years. And that's because of the slowing economy and also less fuel consumed by American consumers with a blizzard on the East Coast and then the blizzard in the Midwest. That blizzard, by the way, also impacted the cattle market earlier this week, because several plants were closed because of inability to move livestock to market. Back to the ethanol picture, though, it rose 926,000 barrels in the week ended January 29th. That is the most since the record large stockpile seen in March of 2012. The stocks build came despite average production of the gasoline additive dropping 2,000 barrels per day to an average of 959,000 barrels a day. That's the lowest rates since November. Another ethanol development coming into play happened in Argentina, because there this week, the Argentine government, the president, said he is increasing the required blend of ethanol in gasoline in the South American country to 12%. That would be up from the current 10%. The president, who is on a tour of the Argentine poorer northern provinces, said the additional ethanol would be exclusively derived from sugarcane. And that's an effort to give help to struggling sugar producers in that country. China, of course, in the news this week, and maybe it surprised some people, I'm not sure, but Monsanto said midweek that it received import approval from China for its new genetically modified Roundup Ready 2 Xtend soybeans. And the company said it would begin selling seeds in the United States and Canada. China, which is the world's biggest soybean importer, does not allow imports of new genetically modified crops until they are approved by government regulators. And Monsanto said it is offering discounts to U.S. farmers buying Roundup Ready 2 Xtend seeds in case the regulatory approval does not arrive in time for the 2016 growing season. The company is aiming for about 3 million acres planted in this crop year and expects the genetically approved technology to be planted to two-thirds of U.S. soybean acres by 2009. So a busy week, and could have been a better week on Wall Street. But let's see what's happening with the commodity trade, particularly in the grain market. Max Armstrong will be sitting down with Brian Basting of Advanced Trading, headquartered in Bloomington, Illinois, to talk about that when we continue The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
Brian Basting joining us here from Advanced Trading, Bloomington, Illinois, to talk about the world of the markets. You know what I've noticed here of late, traveling down the roads of the Midwest? There are a lot of grain trucks on the move.
It's been a year, Max, where we're seeing more winter movement than we did typically, because I think a lot of that was a lot of inventory was not sold last summer, and therefore harvest is a little bit slower than expected. As we've seen these markets evolve then, since harvest, we're starting to see a little bit more movement here this winter. Markets, particularly corn, have rebounded a little bit here, and the folks are at least looking at some opportunities.
Growers are doing, I guess, probably what many of you analysts suggested. If you do get a bit of a bump in the price, for goodness sake, try to market some.
I think it's every year is different. This is a year, Max, where we're seeing some regional differences in basis. For example, was extremely strong in the eastern Corn Belt due to the smaller crop last fall. I think we're finally seeing now a little bit of a bump in the market. As you said, some concerns about South America have evolved here, particularly Argentina. So, yeah, I think producers have realized that at least it's a starting point.
Also, I would imagine there is a little bit of pressure to move grain at this time because fairly soon now we'll be posting weight limits on many of those rural roads.
That's true. And this time of year also, you're starting to look at land payments, tax payments, those type of issues also evolve. So it's a bit of a seasonal trend here we're seeing here when we get into February.
Well, since you mentioned South America, let me talk to you about the crops there. I see numbers that seem to be increasing in size. I noticed one firm based in Brazil even came up with a 102 million metric ton soybean crop number. That's a little bit bigger than some people have been using, isn't it?
It sounds like the soybean estimate for Brazil is solidifying, Max. There was some concern earlier about some dryness and some erratic weather there, but I guess the issue now maybe is how big is big. Is it going to be 98, 99, 100 million tons? USDA will come out next week on February 9th with their supply-demand update, so we'll see what they think. The other issue, though, I think it might be double-crop corn in northern Brazil because the soybean crop was planted late last fall. The double-crop corn in northern Brazil is going to be planted later, so we'll have to keep an eye on the weather up there.
Argentina's crops, are they increasing in size also? I thought I saw Informa revising some numbers the other day in that regard.
That's a bit of a weather scare right now, Max, because part of the corn in Argentina is pollinating. It's a bit warm and a bit dry. This weekend could be very important for that corn because if they get some good rain, that'll alleviate those concerns. If they don't get rain, it may start to trim back their crop numbers.
One thing that occurs to me as we get closer to harvest of the crops out of the southern hemisphere, let's see, there's almost always a port strike or an elevator conveyor that breaks down that provides a little bit of excitement for the market for a day or two.
It does seem like that time of year in February and March, the one thing that's really held back the corn export market this year, though, is just the sheer volume of bushels coming out of Brazil and just a tremendous competition this year. And we think the export forecast for corn still may be a bit overstated from the USDA. But who knows? Like you said, maybe we'll get a little bump in activity, maybe for beans here in the next month or two.
We've talked quite a bit about the presidential election that took place in Argentina back in the fall, and I noted with interest this week, my goodness, even their beef exports are going to jump rather substantially now that they got those farmers, they got their president elected, the guy they needed who would release all of those constraints on exports.
Yeah, with the removal of the export tax, or at least the reduction of the export tax for beans, it looks like that the producers down in Argentina for this coming year are going to plant more corn. Now, that won't be planted, of course, until this fall, October, November, but that could be down the road something to keep a close eye on because they've been more oriented toward planting more beans the last few years.
We were talking a little bit earlier. You mentioned the USDA report coming up in just a few days. There are two dates that come to mind for me that we might want to watch, too, or at least one later on this month. February 25th. I know the Ag Outlook Forum is coming up the 25th and 26th. And usually on that first day, there's quite a release of data, is there not?
There is. That'll be some updated projections from the USDA, not only domestic projections here in the U.S., but also some world projections. And those have gained more market interest the last 5 years or so, I'd say. So, yes, the Outlook Forum is something that kind of breaks up that time period in the wintertime and gives us some fresh fundamental information to chew on.
Always good to see you, sir. We look forward to the next opportunity to visit, and thanks for joining us this weekend.
Always good to be with you, sir.
Brian Basting visiting with Max Armstrong, and there will be quite a few reports coming out between now and the end of March that could very well have a major impact. Besides the Agriculture Forum that USDA puts together every year in February. Well, the annual convention of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association, they select a chair every year. The Cattlemen's Beef Board administers and decides how the money is spent that's collected by the beef checkoff. And this year, they elected Ann Anderson, who is a cow-calf operator and a rancher in Texas. She is the new chair of the Cattlemen's Beef Board. I sat down with her in San Diego, California, and found that she brought a very interesting background to the position of chair of the Cattlemen's Beef Board.
Well, you know, I was really involved when I got out of college and worked for cattle feeders, first nutritionist hired in the industry, and became very active, ran the Texas Beef Council its first 10 years, involved in 85 when we wrote the legislation and when we passed this checkoff to make it a reality. And after 10 years, decided it's time to go back to the ranch. Went back to the ranch and private industry, and after 15 years of being on the ranch, I got a call one day that said, "We need somebody that was around in 85. Would you mind being nominated for the Cattlemen's Beef Board?" That took a lot of thought. I mean, I was out of the loop, okay? I was real good at, you know, getting some calves on the ground and some meat in the market, but not that. So anyway, I said, "Oh yeah, I'll try it." And after the first meeting, I thought I should have stayed at home. So much had changed in 15 years. Anyway, I got up here and thought, well, if I'm here, I want to make good use of my time, so you run for the executive committee and then eventually end up here, and I'm really excited to be here.
For people not familiar with the Cattlemen's Beef Board, what's your number one goal?
The promotion of the product and the industry, okay? But we are about 100 people from throughout the United States represent by producer organizations, by the numbers of cattle, that come together to take the checkoff investment and make the very best decisions to ensure our return to the producers that paid it, okay? And we really look at long-term, not short-term, and we are so excited that in spite of last year, 2015, and what a tumultuous year it was for the industry, demand went up 7%. Now remember, supply and demand aren't the same thing in our business, right? But demand, in spite of everything, in spite of the economy, in spite of the oil industry, went up 7%.
You talked about change, and one of the things you mentioned is beef, it's what's for dinner. That was a slogan and a sell term that really, I think, impacted. But times have changed.
Oh, it was so exciting because I had the privilege of being on the committee that made that decision back in the early 80s. And First time we had an agency, first time we had money in the Beef It's What's for Dinner campaign. James Garner, if people can remember him, the rodeo music. We had ads on TV. We had ads on the radio. We were in print advert, and it was great, and it made a huge impact. It was like 81% of consumers recognized the ad, okay? But as the years went on, the consumer changed. And the one thing I'm so proud of the Checkoff for doing is it changed with the years and to address the audience, and made the biggest change in the last 2 years as they suddenly realized that didn't work with the millennials and the millennial that they influence and their parents and their kids. And so everybody wants it fresh. They want it direct. And the consumers want to ask questions direct. And so the cattle industry itself now must be the face of the industry and ensuring that our kids and grandkids have a chance to be the same kind of producers we were, to say the same pride and lifestyle that we have. It is in the hands of the producers themselves. And so the Checkoff has changed, and now what it has to do, it has to be a partner, and it has to anticipate the research that's going to be needed or anticipate the channel that's going to be needed to convey it, but it has to go to the producers. And so it's been a real change in direction. But a great example was the recent nutrition guidelines. The beef industry did the research over a couple of year period to provide the data to document beef's role in a lean diet. And being a nutritionist and a dietitian background, you can tell how I believed in that. But anyway, they did the research, and then the producers themselves had to win in Washington to get them to include that research in the findings. That is a prime example of a team. And that is what the Checkoff has become. They have to do the homework, they have to anticipate, they have to have all the pieces ready, and then they hand them off to the producers, who are their partners and who must now be the face of the industry.
And one final question before we run out of time. I very frequently hear from housewives and, well, gentlemen too in Chicago saying, what's it like out there on a farm or ranch? Do they have electricity? Do they, you know, what's the day like for you on the ranch in Texas?
Orion, it's wonderful. But I got to tell you, the first thing is that clear sunset in the morning, and it makes you thankful to be alive every day, okay? And we do have all the conveniences of our cohorts in the city, though internet might not be quite as fast, okay? But we have it. And all the amenities are there. But our lives, for the most part, are outside. If the fence needs fixing, I fix the fence. And frequently we have a bunch of water troughs, and something's inevitably broken, and you're out replacing pieces of a water trough to make sure your animals have water, or you got a cold front that came in unexpectedly. And we actually are the people out that put the hay out. I mean, you're a partner in the ranch, okay? And you won't believe this, but 1 out of 3 of the management decisions on ranches today are made by women.
Ann Anderson from Austin, Texas, the new chair of the Cattlemen's Beef Board. We'll be back with a final look at markets when we continue on the markets, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need. Today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
The commodity markets continue to be influenced a great deal by what happens on Wall Street, particularly that cattle market. Cattle market continues to have its ups and downs. We're still waiting to see if the CME Group is going to put in a circuit breaker for those cattle futures and feeder cattle futures, because Terry Duffy at the Cattlemen's Convention in San Diego, and Terry is executive of the CME Group, said that the Merck would consider putting in a circuit breaker because of the up and down limit moves we have seen over the past couple of months. We're going to try to cover more of that in an upcoming The Markets program and visit with Terry about it. But the falling stock market today toppled the live cattle futures market, closing lower, weighed by caution in the cash price market and the heavy losses in the stock market. Alton Kalo, an analyst with Steiner Consulting Group, said some of the CME live cattle selling is a waiting game for market-ready or cash cattle to change hands later today. Packers in Texas and Kansas bid $138 for cash cattle, pretty much in line with last week's sale, but feedlot sellers said they were asking up to about $142. And this week's blizzard in the Central Plains disrupted livestock production, temporarily closed some packing plants, which could lend support to cash values in the hardest hit areas. As far as the where we start the cattle market on Monday, well, today the April live cattle contract dropped $1.57. That means Monday we'll start the trade at $134.07 a hundredweight, and the April feeder cattle contract dropped $3.02 today. That means we will be starting the Monday trade at an even $153. Investors sold the CME lean hog contract, that'll expire on February 12th, and bought April hog futures today. And at the end of the day, we were looking at a red screen there too. The February lean hog contract dropping 22 cents. It'll start Monday at $64.90 a hundredweight. And the May contract dropped 37 cents. It will start at $76.45 a hundredweight. Meanwhile, the grain market also a red screen there today as we moved lower. And wheat falling to a three-week low after the top importer of wheat in the world, Egypt, canceled a tender for wheat for the second time this week. Corn and soybeans also down at the board, with all three markets posting a weekly decline ahead of the report that we get next Tuesday from the Department of Agriculture. That's the supply and demand forecast due on Tuesday. There were some rains in the forecast for Argentina. Argentina has been a concern to some corn and soybean traders because of the need for rain, and so prices have been affected just a little bit there. And that second cancellation of a tender by Egypt impacted the world wheat market because they thought Egypt would be making a major buy of wheat. So where do we start Monday? Well, March wheat dropped 6.25 cents today. We'll start at 466¾ a bushel Monday. March corn dropped 3 cents today. We'll start Monday at 365¾. New crop December corn will start at 389¼ after dropping 2¼ cents today. March soybeans dropped 5¾ cents today. That means that contract will start Monday at 867½. New crop November beans dropped 4 cents, and they'll start next week at 883¼. So another up and down week on Wall Street, and back to China for a moment. A major acquisition, because Syngenta accepted a bid for $43 billion from ChemChina this week. That would be the biggest ever foreign takeover by a Chinese buyer. Syngenta, of course, Swiss-based, and turned down Monsanto's several approaches last year. So now it is China, a Chinese firm entering that picture. Well, we're reporting again this week from Arizona, where the sun is shining brightly on the Phoenix Golf Open. You can't believe the number of people that show up in the Valley of the Sun. They had 100,000 people at the course for opening day yesterday, another 100,000 today, and they just attract literally hundreds of thousands of people. So we're enjoying the sun and the golf, and thank you. And along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson. Thank you for joining us for The Market, sponsored by the CME Group.